This podcast is free and it's accessible to everyone thanks to support from listeners like you. If you value this show, please consider supporting its production by donating to our home, KUOW. It only takes a minute to give, and you'll be helping to support the production of this podcast. Make a donation at kuow.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks.
Hey, good morning. It's Patricia Murphy. It's Wednesday. This is Seattle Now. It may be April 2024, but a lot of soccer lovers are looking ahead to the summer of 2026 when Seattle hosts six World Cup matches. By the time the World Cup is done, almost a million people will have come to Seattle to see the beautiful game in person. The city is already planning. Sure, it's early, but there's a lot of work to be done to ensure everything goes smoothly. Seattle Now sports correspondent Bon Jones is here to talk about it. But first, let's get you caught up. The King County Council's Law and Justice Committee will be getting a briefing today on the state of juvenile detention. The presentation title indicates young people are staying too long in short-term facilities. The information comes from a 2017 through 2023 audit that reviewed, among other things, how long young people were staying in secure detention and what support systems were in place. No doubt, airplane maker Boeing has had a rough couple of months. Today, investors learn more about the financial fallout. The company is set to release its first quarter earnings, the first since a high-profile door plug blowout grounded its 737 MAX 9 fleet, leading to increased scrutiny of the company and the safety of its planes. And on Thursday, a city council committee will discuss changes to recently enacted legislation requiring minimum payments for app-based delivery drivers. The law went into effect in January, and almost immediately, app-based delivery fees increased. Thursday's discussion by the Governance, Accountability, and Economic Development Committee will hash out ideas to keep costs for network companies down while still guaranteeing a decent minimum earning standard for app-based workers. That's it for now. Make sure to come back tonight for Evening Headlines with Paige Browning.
Sergeant Pulisic on the run. Pulisic has Weah. Pulisic rolls it in. Tim Weah!
The international excitement and pageantry of the World Cup is coming to Seattle 2 years from now. Seattle has six matches scheduled at Lumen Field between mid-June and mid-July 2026, including an appearance by the U.S. men's national team. More than 4 billion people around the world watched the 2022 World Cup, and there are even more teams and even more matches this time around. The 2026 World Cup is being described as the biggest sporting event in history, and Seattle gets a piece. Seattle Now sports correspondent Bon Jones is here to talk about what our city is doing to get ready. Bon, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, happy to be here.
This seems like a pretty big deal. How big a deal is it?
This is maybe one of the biggest deals in city history, region history. I think a lot of people are underestimating just how crazy Seattle is going to be between, I would say, June 10th and July 10th, 2026. Take whatever image is in your head and multiply it by 10 at least. Our six matches are expected to draw between 400 and 750,000 in-person visitors, millions of tourist dollars, and 2 billion sets of eyes on these six matches in Seattle internationally.
All right, I'm already starting to get a little anxious, Vaughn, about whether or not my city is ready for this level of interaction on the world stage.
Yeah, some fun numbers here. Taylor Swift's two performances in Seattle drew about 144,000 people. So if you need that number comparison, imagine about 10 Taylor Swift concerts worth of people in town for about a month. I was earlier this week at an event called Region Ready, which was hosted by the Seattle Sports Commission and the Port of Seattle. Lots of guest speakers from the city, from the commission, and from this FIFA World Cup Seattle nonprofit that's sort of in charge of all the scheduling stuff up here. A lot of comparisons drawn to the 1962 World's Fair, which drew millions of visitors over a few months. I think this is on a whole nother level and could potentially be the biggest event in the city's history. As I said, 2 billion eyes on six matches over the course and almost a million people over the course of a month is really daunting, but this is going to be huge.
Yeah. How ready are we for this event at this point?
The short answer is not ready.
Mm. Okay.
There's
yeah.
a lot that we don't know. There's actually one more of these region ready conferences in 2025 before the event comes to fruition. So you and I might be talking about the same thing around a year from now.
Okay.
One thing that was really helpful at the conference yesterday, though, was hearing April Putney, who's the chief strategy officer for Seattle's FIFA World Cup planning nonprofit, lay things out in terms of what we do know and what we don't. So what we do know is the games are all being played at Lumen Field, probably in the early afternoon, and all of the games are going to be played on a weekday, so good luck getting to work at all ever. We know that the U.S. men's national team is going to be playing here, and like I said, the initial estimation of crowds, upper end is 750,000 people, and then our viewership about 2 billion.
All right, a lot of crowds, a lot of money, too, coming into our city, Vaughn. The World Cup's more than 2 years away. We're talking about it now. We've got 2 years to get ready.
Yes, we do. I think the things that we don't know for summer 2026 is what our city's hospitality industry is going to look like, what our transit is going to look like, where these teams will be practicing and staying, where around the vast Western Washington sphere is going to be getting sort of FIFA fan activation support. We also don't even know how much these tickets are going to be or when they go on sale. So there's a lot of stuff that we have to start thinking about. Something that Markham McIntyre, who's Seattle's director of the Office of Economic Development, he told me it's really important to be communicating early and often with everybody involved. He thinks that's a really big key to making sure this works out.
The world's going to be in our backyard and it's going to be really fun, but we've got to make sure that we don't just do enough to kind of pull it off. We've got to use this as a jumping off point to really show up and shine bright for the world.
All right. Well, I'm going to be honest. I'm the kind of person who used to bolt out of Fremont when the solstice parade went down because I didn't want a crowd. So give me a reason to stick around as a Seattleite who is likely to bolt. What am I going to get out of hosting all of these guests in my city?
That's a great question. I think one of the big buzzwords at this Region Ready conference was the words legacy projects. the idea is when FIFA comes to town, you have to leave it better than how you found it. Host countries have a habit of building infrastructure ahead of the FIFA World Cup. And though we have our stadium already, there are things they're looking to get done. Hamdi Mohammed, who's with the Port of Seattle, says there's going to be a lot of improvements to SeaTac Airport, which makes a lot of sense with a high volume of international arrivals. She also says that everything the port is working on is being looked at through, can this be done by 2026?
Every one of our commissioners, when we have our airport folks presenting, that is the one thing that we ask them, is this project going to be completed in time for FIFA? Is there anything we could do to make sure that we're expediting it?
Something I heard a lot about was making sure the waterfront is ready. I don't know how much credit is due to the World Cup there because it was already supposed to be done by 2025. But there's also the sentiment that the mayor's downtown activation plan was scheduled in part on reaching a lot of these goals before we get a lot of visitors for the World Cup. The term street level experiences came up a few times because so many people are going to be headed to the stadium in areas like Soto, Pioneer Square, and the CID. So whenever you step off the light rail or get out of your Uber or step off your scooter or whatever, they want your street level experience to be really, really good. And we saw a little bit of that being tried out in the 2023 MLB All-Star Game. The city put out a map of an ideal walking route to the stadium. The effort did take some community graffiti cleanup and some sweeps from SPD of homeless encampments. So that's something I'm going to be looking out for as well.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the neighborhoods individually because we have the big infrastructure that we need to shore up and get ready for the world stage, but there's a lot of smaller neighborhoods that are going to really feel these crowds. And this could either play out really well or not so well. So how are they being thought about through this process?
Totally. Yeah, that was something I was thinking about too. And there's actually an interesting answer that kind of got ahead of this a little bit. This Seattle FIFA nonprofit has already begun some preliminary community discussions in the CID, and they're planning to expand to Soto and Pioneer Square and then Seattle as a whole. Talking to residents and businesses and stakeholders and just asking, what do you need from us in order to be successful as part of this sort of legacy project? project idea leaving an area better than how you found it. But there's also more of a wide-reaching implication. Like I said, they want to expand to Seattle proper. But somebody from the Fremont Chamber of Commerce during the Q&A portion of the event said, hey, the Solstice Parade is happening at the same time that the World Cup is in town. How are you going to make sure that other neighborhoods are getting looked after, was the term that he used. And I think that's something that still needs to be addressed.
I'm guessing there's some dollar signs attached to those requests,
sure.
Vaughn. One added element here for our city is that Seattle is one of two guaranteed to see the U.S. men's national team. So let's talk about how that happened.
Yeah, this was a really interesting note I made during the conference. The U.S. men's national team actually got to pick the cities it plays its early games in, and they picked Seattle. The team feels like Seattle has this really lively soccer culture with a lot of excitement behind it. Credit to the Sounders and the Rain for really getting people excited about the game. They're also playing here specifically on Juneteenth, which is a point of emphasis for the planning to make sure that Seattle's commitment to equity and racial justice is on display during the game as well.
All right. Well, there are must-haves and nice-to-haves, I'm sure, on the list of things that need to get done. What do we really need to do? And what are people really thinking about right now?
Yeah, these must-haves. I actually asked this question to some people at the event. Hypothetically, if the World Cup was in like 2 weeks, what would you really want to get done?
Yeah.
And they all groaned at me and told them that was a recurring nightmare that they had. But they did all have a similar answer, which was transportation and security. Moving people around and making the experience accessible and making sure everybody is safe. Driving in the city is going to be a nightmare, so they are working on other alternate transportation routes. Light rail, things like bike and scooter shares, this wayfinding path I mentioned earlier. That's probably not going to be enough, especially for people who come from countries with much better transportation infrastructure than us. But I promise that people are thinking about it. And then one answer that also stuck out to me was from Mark McIntyre with the city's economic development office, of just like, does everyone know? Does the entire city know? Do all the businesses, do all the people know just how crazy this is going to be? A must-have is this constant line of communication to remind. It kind of reminds me of like doomsday prepper stuff. Do you have your canned food? Do you have the bunker that you can stay in? Are you ready?
But that's kind of smart, right? That what we're going to be experiencing is going to be intense, and it's going to be kinetic, and there's going to be a lot of people in town. So get ready for that. I'm also glad you brought up public safety. Let's talk about how SPD is thinking about this.
Yeah, there was actually a brief Q&A with the Kansas City Sports Commission director, and she made mention of the shooting that happened at the Chiefs' most recent Super Bowl parade. Of course, with massive events like this, there's a lot at stake and a lot of people that need to be protected. On the more fun side of things, SPD went over to England recently, and some officers trained with England's police force that monitors crowd activity at soccer games.
Definitely have a lot to work with
over
there.
Yeah, to keep those football hooligans from getting too unruly, as it were. That made me chuckle. But SPD is also talking constantly in communication. Apparently, they have weekly meetings with the regional wing of the Department of Homeland Security and the Federal Cybersecurity Department to constantly assess the risk of potential attacks. There's also improvements that SPD is hoping to make ahead of this. They want to bolster their already existing real-time crime center. There was mention of a gunshot detection system, and there's also some planning in the works to potentially alter some local laws, according to Captain Sean Stevens.
Something else that we would like to do is purchase drones. Most large agencies in this country do have drones. Currently, our local ordinances prohibit us from having those, but we're working on trying to get that modified so that we can bring that technology to bear.
All right. Well, safety, public safety, definitely going to be top of mind if we're interested in hosting big events like this. Let's fast forward to 2026, Vaughn. We played a good game. The city's made a great impression. What happens next?
Yeah, now, funnily enough, after everybody has been through this citywide experience for a month, it's time to start thinking about more events you can host. Part of the Seattle Sports Commission's job is to angle for events of all sizes, including things like last year's MLB All-Star Game. On top of the World Cup in 2026, the Women's PGA Championship is here later this year, and some NCAA Men's Basketball March Madness games are going to be here next March. And as for 2026 and beyond, they're actually hoping hoping to host the Women's World Cup here in Seattle in 2027. They have a bid out for that. I can't think of a better area of the United States to do that because Seattle loves women's soccer. They're also hoping to host one of the next few NFL drafts, an NHL All-Star game, and a Big Ten basketball tournament when UW moves conferences. None of those things will be the size of the World Cup, but some folks from the Seattle Sports Commission basically told me this is the big prove-it moment that Seattle can host events, and if they do this and they do it right, many more events are to come.
All right, we get it right on the big stage, we can take the smaller events, no problem. Vaughn Jones, Seattle Now sports correspondent, really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to Seattle Now, and extra thanks to the listeners who donate to support this show. Today's episode was produced and reported by Vaughn Jones. It was edited by Caroline Chamberlain Gomez. Our production team also includes Andy Hurst, Paige Browning, and Claire McGrain. Greg Kramer does our theme music. Seattle Now and KUOW Public Radio are members of the NPR Network. I'm Patricia Murphy. See you later.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.